That's you know, Oregon is really a great homegrown story of remarkable enterprise.
You know, I think everybody's feeling the stress of meeting the need.
I went to University of Oregon for political science, and what do you do with a political science degree? You start a business.
There you go.
Here we are. There you go.
Hi, this is Dr. Bud Pierce, and welcome to Oregon Crossroads. And again, today, let me start off by saying that the opinions that are given today are mine and mine alone, not representative of any organization. Now, I've been doing Oregon Crossroads for a while now. Most of you know me from my talks about COVID-19, the pandemic, my medical talks, but this one's going to be a little different. I'm still going to wear my white coat because when you're a doctor, you see life through a doctor's eyes. A practicing doctor, that just how you see it. And when doctors quit practicing, and I remember a very wise older doctor spoke to me and he said, you know, Bud, once you're out of it a couple years, you don't see it the same way. You don't see it through the same lens. But I'm a practicing doctor, see patients 5 days a week still, love doing it. Those of you who know me know that that's really who I am and what I am. So I see issues through a physician's lens, and that's the lens of my mind and the lens of my judgment. But I want to talk about some topics that are a little bit uncomfortable. And again, if it's something you want to listen to, great. I encourage you to listen. If you just want me to talk about medical stuff, maybe you want to focus on those talks a little bit more. But today I want to talk about race relations and Black Lives Matters. And again, this is a very important topic, obviously, now in our society. I really got really interested in this in 2014. I always had an interest, all of you have, and we all have, because we want to have racial harmony. We want to have peace, we want to have a great society, we want to have a great state. But when Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, Missouri, and I don't want to get into the event, but what impacted me was the racial hatred that came out following that event. How much it seemed that people really hated each other for who they were racially. And it was so against what the 1960s civil rights movement was about. I mean, the civil rights movement was about ending legal discrimination. And I am proud to say that my generation, baby boomers, have done a great job of getting rid of a lot of isms and racism and sexism and all kinds of things. We've done a pretty darn good job. That's the legal part. The next part is how do you change the hearts of people so that they can actually live in harmony? And I think that, again, the events that surround us now have shown that we've got work to do. So what I've done in my personal life is I joined our local NAACP, and I'm involved in their activities, and I have joined the Oregon League of Minority Voters, and again, another organization that seeks to promote racial minorities into the mainstream of society. The NAACP is in all facets of life, the Oregon League of Minority Voters into the political sphere. So again, that's been my personal effort to support and be involved in those organizations. And I've thought about, you know, where do we want to be and where we want to be and how do we get to the place where people actually will respect one another and like one another and love one another. And it's come down in my mind is we have to be able to live and work together better. So we learn to know people as who they are and not as them, that group, them people. We got to get away from that. And what really solidified that in my mind is my life. And so I grew up outside of an Air Force base, and it was racially diverse. And I remember growing up, I can think of several African Americans that they just sit in your mind. They're my friends. One was Terry Paysinger, great basketball player. I love sports. Wasn't very good at it, but loved to compete. Greg Barnes, a tremendous football player. Actually, the only Division I player on our high school team that was awful. I remember playing against him in practice. It was the worst experience of my life because hitting him was like hitting a brick wall, and I wasn't of that ilk. But anyway, so good friends. We socialized together. We had friendships together. That really worked. I think about my military experience in the Marine Corps and going to boot camp, and that was an old guy in boot camp. I was the oldest one there in the Marine Corps boot camp, and we had We had inner city African Americans and farm boys, really, from the center of the country. And I was kind of an old man there. And how we worked together, we were all really equals and sharing bunks and sharing meals and how to fire a weapon and how to hold our act together when the drill instructors were bearing down on us. And again, one team, one family, and one community. And I think that really is so important. And then finally, in my medical career, I remember three African-American physicians outstanding at UCLA. Tony Carl Riddick, who's a great pulmonary critical care doctor in Portland, actually. I remember Billy Cunningham and James Kyle, both great internal medicine doctors. Again, we're trying to survive internship and residency. We're working together. We're sleeping next to each other in cots when we're on call. You know, we're just sharing meals together. And that's how you get to see people for who they really are and not as them and us. And we have to really work hard to get there. And I have some ideas on how to get there, but that'll make, I think, this way too long. So we're not gonna go there. But we are gonna talk about Mr. Floyd and policing and the fear of the African American community of being killed and murdered by the police. Now let me start off by saying, God bless the police officers I've met. Impossible job, inadequate resources. Do a great job. Most of them don't want to hurt a fly. And that's kind of how my view of the police that I have met and known. But I will tell you that the fear of the African-American community in terms of interactions with police is palpable. And I have, again, a good friend who lives in West Lynn, solid citizen, great wife and kids, really nice house. I visited him, tremendously successful. And sometimes he would come to basketball games with us, and he told me one night that he had driven home and he was stopped by police, but he was okay because he knew how to act. His parents had taught him how to act, how to move in the car so that the police officer didn't think he was reaching for a gun and would shoot him. And that one of his greatest fears is that one of his three children would be pulled over by a police officer and that they wouldn't act right and they would die. It's honest. And I know a lot of you listening to this is like, what are you talking about? I don't like to be pulled over by police because I get nervous and they're going to write me a citation. I don't want to deal with all that. But I have zero concern that a police officer is going to harm me in my interaction. But that isn't what African Americans are feeling. And we have to deal with that. We have to deal with that. And what a lot of the outcry and protests that we're hearing right now is the fear of the police and being harmed by the police and the lack of economic justice and being able to participate in the mainstream economy next to us, side by side. And those are the areas that we have to take on. And let me just kind of, I'm not going to go into what I think we need to do to get where we need to get economically. That's important. But let's talk a little bit about policing, because I was around as a young teenager, after the riots of the 60s, and this whole idea of community policing came along. And it has just never been implemented. Never. And everyone seems to agree. And the basic idea of community policing is the police officers would be out in the community on a routine basis. I don't think there should ever be one police officer by themselves. I think they should always be at least in pairs because of the dangerous nature of their work. And that they would be lightly armed, minimally armed, and they'd be just walking in the community, and they would be supporters and counselors and encouragers and the eyes of society and really the protectors. And you'd be very willing and happy that your police officer would come by your shop or business and you'd know them and you'd talk and you'd interact. You'd be walking the streets. If you came upon some kids that were misbehaving, it wouldn't be, you're in trouble, I'm gonna find you. It'd be like a firm but fair parent. It would be like, you can't do that. I don't want to see you doing that again, or something like that. Just like when police officers go into the school, they should be there to build up, to make sure their safety. That's their primary task. But their interaction with students should always be positive, mentoring, building them up, supporting them. So that, again, people turn to the police for help because they look at them as their guardians and as their friends and as their supporters and someone they really look up to. That's the basics of community policing at the interaction with the citizens. Now, behind that, you clearly have to have people that are armed and trained and ready to react to violent people that are damaging the property severely or are hurting people. And they have to be able to react with force. And that's good. But is that the right group to do the daily interaction with citizens on a routine basis and to have insufficient numbers and to have a different approach, which is I have to fine you or punish you or something like that. I think that's the wrong approach. I definitely think that's wrong with our African American community. I think that leads to resentment, tremendous amount of pushback. So I think we're going the wrong way. And finally, obviously, when the police come upon mentally ill and the homeless, not their issue. That should not be a police officer that's responding to a life-threatening situation potentially 5 minutes later. That should, again, be a different kind of person, mental health technique. And obviously, as a society, we have to have places that people can go to and be safe when they're unsafe because of their mental illness or their homelessness. So it's going to take, if we're going to solve this, it's going to take a lot of work. But it's actually, the work's been done. It's really about implementation. It's about getting more people out into the community that will be there for public safety, but there to monitor, to interact if it's life-threatening, but really just to be there as a presence. Because when police are present, people behave better. When authority is present, but not authority coming down on you, but authority you respect and you're happy they're there, it lessens the crime. We need backup, hard police that are trained to deal and ready to deal with, and their job is to deal with violence and how to deal with that in the safest way possible so people aren't harmed. And then the whole issue of the homeless and the mentally ill. And that's the way we're going to get to a better place on the policing. On the economic justice point of view, it's education and training and opportunity, but again, living together. So what I'd ask Oregonians to do is ratchet it down. When you see a person, see them for who they are. Reach out. African Americans are an extreme minority in our state. You got it. When people are an extreme minority, you have to be more welcoming to let them in. Now, if you haven't been, don't feel bad. Because if you go to China and you're not Chinese ethnicity, it's a little hard for you. If you go to Japan, the same thing. If you go to Black Africa, a little hard if you're not a Black African. If you go to Latin America and you're not Latino, not so good. So this isn't a unique thing. There's a little bit of a tribalism in all human beings. But what we're trying to do in America, what we're trying to do in Oregon, is to see people for who they are and what they are, and not this external appearance, and to give everyone a chance to be the best they can be. So with that, I'll wrap it up and encourage Oregonians to be positive, to invite people that aren't exactly like you, to bring them in, and to make Oregon a better place to live for all of us.